Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Relay Bitcoin session, where we talk with and discuss with the most interesting people in the Bitcoin space from all over the world. Right now, today, we have Anita Posh here. Very happy to have you, Anita. You did a lot of stuff in the Bitcoin space. You are a full-time professional in the Bitcoin space, an expert, a consultant, an author, a speaker. And so you do that in the German-speaking area, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, but also now in English for quite some time for like a global audience. You are at a lot of conferences, and you follow the space and you understand the space very deeply for a long time. So I'm very happy you gave us 20 to 30 minutes of your time. Thank you very much, Anita, and I'll let you introduce yourself very quickly as well.
Hi, thank you, Julian. Thanks for the invitation. I'm glad I'm here. Basically all that you said is true. Since beginning of 2017, I found out about Bitcoin again, because 1 week ago I was looking into my tweets and found the first tweet from me about Bitcoin was in end of May 2011.
Wow.
And yeah, and the funny thing is that I can remember back then I thought it's just another payment system like PayPal, and just dismissed it and thought, okay, it's not interesting, it's just another PayPal. I was working in the internet online business space since 1999, basically. Before that, I was an urban planner, and then I decided the internet is more interesting, and I had the feeling back then, this is big, this is going to change how our communication is working, and it also did. So yes, I was in the e-commerce space and also doing a lot of web projects, and I thought, this is not really something where I can contribute to the greater good in society and to the world, and that was always a kind of a goal of mine. And so I found out about Bitcoin again in 2017 and decided, I think that's the thing where I can do my little part of it to educate people about the possibilities, how to improve the humanitarian problems we face in the world. And that was basically the beginning in 2017. I then went full time into Bitcoin, fell in the classical rabbit hole and educated myself about it. And this resulted also in my first book, which is a basic introduction to Bitcoin, to use it safely in German. And I also translated Andreas Antonopoulos' The Internet of Money, the first two volumes, to German.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so that, by the way, these two books are a great introduction into Bitcoin from a non-technical perspective. So if you're interested in the greater goals and possibilities, how we can change the world to be a better place, then read those two these books from Andreas Antonopoulos. And from then on in 2018, I started my podcast. At the beginning, it was in German and English. And after a number of German episodes, I decided to concentrate on English, because Bitcoin is a global medium of exchanging value. And I think also that the biggest use case at the moment is basically in developing countries, not so much in the Western world, where we have a working banking system and a relatively stable currencies. And so I concentrated on bringing stories from countries like Zimbabwe, Argentina. My next interview is with a person talking about Eritrea, about all the human rights abuses that are happening there and how Bitcoin can really help. And
interesting.
So that's the view that I have towards Bitcoin. I think there's too much communication, but I mean, I can't stop that, but about around the price, in every medium, you just read articles about the price, where it's going and why it's it went down in the last weeks. Basically, that's not really interesting. What really is interesting is the technology, how it develops and is being developed, and what the real life use cases for people are. And that's why I'm doing this the Anita Posch show in English. Yeah,
absolutely. I totally agree. So when exactly did you make the decision? I'm now going all in, like my professional career. I devote all of my time, basically work time to Bitcoin. And why did you do that decision? Like what's the purpose of that?
Yeah, there are many reasons for that. Basically, it's had been a general decision. My own decision in 2016, because I was always self-employed and working very free in a way, but also didn't have high income. And so I had my freedom, but no money. And in 2016, then I was employed in bigger companies for e-commerce projects. And then I decided again, okay, that's not the way I can work. I'm not the kind of person who only has to have these 40 hours like every week and, you know, ask if I can go to a conference or something like that. So, coming back to this decision in 2016, I took a year off and went to Berlin, because I knew Berlin is the tech hub, is the startup city of Europe, and all the innovation is happening there. And I was looking for basically a business idea for me. And I knew I want to be a solopreneur, so work alone without a big team, because that's too much for me, you know. I wanted to stay flexible. And so I was looking for an idea. And so in 2017, when I found out back again about Bitcoin and the impact it can have, I realized, oh, wow, actually, that's what I want to do. And I can do it on my own. I don't need anybody for it. I mean, it's good to have a network of people, of course, you need that. But I knew that I'm also, I think, quite a good speaker, and I can explain things very well, I think. And so I thought, this is something that I, as a one-woman business, can do. And that's why I decided to do it.
That's very cool. So you didn't stop full-time employment to go into Bitcoin. You stopped your job just basically because it wasn't the right thing for you. And then you found your way to Bitcoin and started a career from scratch there. That's very interesting. It's not like the original kind of way how I did it, for example, and a lot of others then.
No, I was looking for new opportunities. And the funny thing is, I didn't find it 2016 in Berlin, although it's basically the Bitcoin center has been always in Germany and in our area here in Western Europe. So it took me really to 2017 and a conference in Vienna to find out or hear about it again in this way that I could grasp its positive possibilities.
Cool. Because you're talking about Vienna, I'm just going to grab one question from our audience on Twitter. And it is, aside from Tian Bistro, what decent place in Vienna accepts Bitcoin? So are there good places in Vienna that accept Bitcoin? Is Vienna even in a kind of a Bitcoin city like Berlin or Zurich or Zug?
But the funny thing is actually that Vienna and Austria, we had the first Bitcoin association here. So in 2011, Bitcoin Austria was founded.
So early.
And I think in 2013 or 14, the Swiss Bitcoin Association and the, 14, how is it called? Bundesblock? No, how is the German association called? I'm sorry, I don't know the name at the moment. But so we were very early. And I've heard that a lot of German like startup refugees came to Austria to build their companies here. Yeah. And we have a very good regulation, I would say, here, and also a so-called sandbox where startups can experiment with startup ideas, business ideas in the Bitcoin space. And we actually have, I think, one of the highest densities of Bitcoin ATMs in Austria. And I think it's because of those pioneers who live here, who were so early. And I have been to the Tian restaurant. It's a vegan restaurant, which is very good, but it's also a little bit expensive, to be honest. Yes, you can pay with Bitcoin there. And as far as I know, there is a company called Salamantex. They are like offering point of sale solutions for merchants. And there is a restaurant, a Mexican restaurant called Pancho. I've been there very often, but that was also before Bitcoin. And there's a wine bar and there's the crypto hotel, as far as I know. I've never been there, but they seem to also have a bar where you can pay with crypto. I guess they have reopened now. I'm not sure, but yeah.
So basically everything you would wish for a short trip, like if you want to spend 2 or 3 days in Vienna, you can eat, you can have some wine, you can sleep somewhere and all on Bitcoin. Cool.
And you can exchange your Bitcoin to local currency or vice versa. So yeah.
Right. Via ATM. Exactly. What else? What else would you need? Awesome. Okay. Let's talk about the interesting stuff. Your podcast first. So you, Bitcoin & Co, you interviewed more than 100 people in there and like very interesting people, deep experts usually. So what is your podcast about in like one or two sentences, and why did you start it? Why did you think this project needs to be in the world? Like the world needs this podcast.
As you say, so Bitcoin und Co. is my German, basically version of the podcast, and the Anita Posch Show is the English one. I started it because podcasts were basically my first source of information too. So one of the first podcasts I was listening to is the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast, which is called Speaking of Bitcoin Today with four hosts. One of them is Andreas Antonopoulos. And also I can remember What Bitcoin Did was with Peter McCormick was one I was listening to. And I thought, so back then there weren't that many Bitcoin podcasts. And I thought that's basically on the one hand, a great way for me to ask questions. So directly from the source. And I'm always interested in getting the answers from the source, like from the people like Adam Beck. So why or how did he come up with Hashcash? What is his opinion on the decentralization of Bitcoin and such? You know, the people who were there from the beginning and have really the best view on the developments. And that's basically only possible in English. I had a time where I thought, okay, I will do the interviews in English and translate them to German and like build a German version of it so that people can have a translated voice speaking over the original interview. But it's so much work. I don't have the time to do this and also not the money. You know, I would have to pay translators and people who do the video stuff and everything. And so I'm only one person. I had to like prioritize what I want to do. And so I here and there, when I'm interviewed in German, I put it also on my German podcast, but basically I'm focusing on English at the moment.
Cool. And so you said you wanted to do it for yourself. So you get the first hand information. Like that was the first, that was one aspect of it. And I totally relate to that because I'm kind of doing the same. Like I really like to talk to people like you and others in the Bitcoin space so that I can learn. So that's an interesting thing. Could you tell us like the 2-3 basic things you have learned, or like the ones that are most prominent in your head you have learned from doing this podcast and interviewing all these hundreds of people?
I mean, of course, my goal is also that people can listen to what I talk with these people. Otherwise, I would not need to release it. And what have I learned? I have learned not only much about Bitcoin, and everybody can also listen to this. I heard from people, for instance, they said to me, look, I'm listening to your podcast because I'm so happy you're asking all the questions I would never dare to ask.
Wow.
And I think that's also very important. You know, I don't know how it's in your case, but I sometimes know the answer, or I think I know the answer. I don't know the answer really, but I think I know the facts, you know. But then I learn something new again, and I also don't show that I maybe know it, because I want people to give the answer, you know, so that the audience can listen to it from the original source. And I've not only learned a lot about Bitcoin, but also a lot about podcasting. And the fun thing is that podcasting is basically, from its philosophy, related to Bitcoin, because as a podcaster, you can be independent, or that's basically how podcasting was born. And now you suddenly have the combination of podcasting, being an independent podcaster, with independent neutral money like Bitcoin, with the streaming money that you can now send over the Sphinx Chat app or the Breeze wallet. So you now can basically pay the podcast host what you wish. So for his or her, what it brings you in value, like you learn something, you can give back directly to the podcast host. And this has not been possible before Bitcoin and before the Lightning Network. And that's also why I'm such a fan of the Lightning Network, because it enables completely new business models for content creators. And so I not only learned about Bitcoin, the combination of Bitcoin and podcasting, I have learned so much from that also in using Bitcoin and the Lightning Network, because now I have my own node running and I'm in one of the rings of fire that are now in the community a thing, you know, like people get together over Telegram channels or something like that and decide, hey, let's make a ring of fire, like we connect our nodes with each other to get higher liquidity and to improve the Lightning network. And I think that's so fascinating about the whole Bitcoin community. Everybody is so supportive, and it's not like we don't do that because we want to commercialize it. We do that because we want everybody to be able to join. And I think that's a very important thing.
Exactly, it's really a community project from its heart, from its start in 2009, and still is. That's the interesting thing. Even though all these corporates and hedge funds and banks are coming in that obviously want to commercialize, and they do to a certain extent, but then in the end, it will always stay a community project because it's an open source software, right? So nobody can just come and change something just because he or she has a lot of money or, you know, a lot of power, whatever it is, and will always be a community project. And that's also why it attracts so many interesting, inspiring, and friendly people, because they are usually people that have a big vision or share a big vision, and they want to jointly achieve it, and not only for the financials and not only for personal gain or whatever. So that's really why it also worked, or has worked so far, and hopefully will bring it even to a bigger state later on. So you, as you said, you know, community is very important, obviously also for you, for your job, for your podcast. Community is obviously very important. And I know you have a big community of listeners and fans and stuff and contributors. So how did that change? How did like the audience and your community change from when you started in 2017 to now? Did you see like does it go from like tech nerds to normal people that engage more? Or I'm sure you get a lot of feedback and kind of know what your audience looks like.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm still also struggling for myself to like target the target audience, like to make it very small, because they always tell you to build a tribe or a community, you have to have a clear goal and a clear target group. And at the beginning, actually, I wanted to make this podcast for newbies to educate people on what is Bitcoin. And I think if you follow the first years of my interviews, the first, let's say, 50 interviews, you can follow that really very good. But then I realized I heard from like Bitcoin developers and people in the space who I'm like, oh wow, he or she is doing this and that, who told me, yes, I'm listening to your podcast. And I was like, what, really? A great honor. Yeah. And so in the last years, I or months, I came to the conclusion that my show is maybe more for enthusiasts, you know, people who are already know about Bitcoin, who did their first steps, and now they want to explore it more. And because I also, in very often, I think I'm talking with people about topics that are not mainstream topics, you know. I mean, like I did an interview in January, I think, with Jameson Lopp about clean mining. And now, suddenly, you know, with discussions about, Elon Musk and Michael Saylor and a council around mining and those mining companies who only want to mine clean transactions or Bitcoin. Now that topic is back again, and it's very important, I think, to focus on that, to educate the community about it, why it's important, why we need to be vigilant against like businesses trying to take over the code or the consensus or something like that. And so I think it has changed a little bit, and but still I try to be approachable for everybody.
I see, very interesting. And so the other format you have aside from the podcast is your book. And unfortunately, I didn't read it yet. I'm very honest here. But that's also why I would like to get your three main takeaways of the book. Not so that I don't have to read it. I definitely will read it. But just for me to have an interesting spark of what it's going to be to read it. Like it's called Earn Bitcoin or Learn Bitcoin. Is in brackets, so that's already a very cool title. Please give us a little summary, like the two or three main points, main takeaways from the book.
Thank you. It's written in English and it's called Learn Bitcoin, as you say, because like it's about learning and about earning, because I think the earning side, we don't look at it as much as we should. Everybody is just exchanging money and investing in Bitcoin. Well, I think for the most, the highest number of people in the world, we'll need to earn it anyway. So like I've been to Africa and I saw that with Stackwork, people there can earn Lightning on their smartphones and immediately exchange it into mobile points for their phones, for instance, and they don't even need to know how the Lightning network is working. And there are a lot of developments at the moment how you can start to earn Bitcoin as a content creator, but also as a regular person. If you, for instance, sell your old bicycle, you could say, I would like to get Bitcoin for it. Yeah. And I think it's very important. So I have some sources in the book how you can start earning Bitcoin. And the first part is basically a basic writing about the relation of Bitcoin to the financial monetary systems we have at the moment. It tells you the history of money a little bit, the history of cryptocurrencies, of Bitcoin. What the petrodollar is, for instance, which I think is very important, and also how our current fiat system works. Because I, for instance, think, and that's also a thing that I'm writing in the book, the fiat system basically is the reason why we have this crisis, the climate crisis, you know, and also our economical crisis. It's because of our debt system, and which is trying to commodify or needs to commodify everything. And I think these are very important parts, and I talk about it in the book. And the next part is how to use and store Bitcoin safely and securely, and that you basically only own Bitcoin if you have the private keys for it. And I also talk about why it is so important to have this kind of self-custody.
Awesome. So it's also called a practical guide for beginners, right? So it's really learn like why Bitcoin is relevant, how to use it correctly, and even how to earn it at some point.
Exactly. That's exactly that's a very good description. Yeah. And you just said you haven't read it. I mean, it's not out yet, but I've put it on GitHub. So basically everybody can contribute. And I would also ask you to contribute. Relay is also already, I think, in the book, should be, yes, because I have a chapter about auto DCA services. Yeah, so
awesome.
I ask
very
everybody
happy to contribute. Yeah, sure.
Yes, please. So
if you can send me the link, I'm very happy to go through it, and especially the DCA part, I might be able to contribute and work with one or two other service providers. I obviously know kind of who is out there, who are our competitors or like competing friends, and also obviously about the concept of DCA. This is what we learn about a lot, and we're very happy to share some knowledge, of course.
Yeah, great. I mean, I actually introduce everybody who's listening and who wants to contribute to do this. It's on github.com/AnitaPosch/learn. Maybe minus Bitcoin, learn Bitcoin. But if you find my GitHub, then you find it. And
of course.
It will be out on July 24th. So I have 1 or 2 weeks until I have to give it to the layout designer.
Amazing. So you actually gave us a pre information here, pre-release. That's very cool. I didn't even know. I thought it was out, but very cool. So I'm really looking forward to that and happy to contribute as well. So let's go to some Bitcoin questions that people ask in the community, but also are very interesting to me. Like right now, we have all these discussions again about Elon Musk gets out. Is Bitcoin to is does it have a future when it comes to sustainability, mining, scaling? The fees are high again. Lightning is not very broadly accepted yet, so can it scale? Does it use too much energy? Does China have too big of centralized power? All these critics that we hear all over again for years now. The main question for me is, can Bitcoin still fail, or is it even too late to fail? And if yes, what would be like the biggest threats or the biggest reasons why it would fail?
To be honest, I mean, I'm in this space now for 4 years, and I can remember in 2017 when I started, I heard so much FUD stories, like the same stories as now. I think in 2018 already I wrote about the energy consumption of Bitcoin, and that basically, I mean, I've seen that in the last days, I think 40%, I mean, we know 40 to up to 70% of the energy that's used in Bitcoin is from renewables. And with the lower thing, like 40% of it, it's the greenest industry in the world. So these are all arguments, I think, from altcoins, from central banks, from people who don't want Bitcoin to happen. They are spreading their news all over the place all again. And people who don't know how Bitcoin works, and that it basically is subsidizing renewable energy, of course, they fall prey for these FUD stories, because if I wouldn't know it better, I might also say we don't have enough energy, and what Bitcoin has no meaning. I mean, for me here, I don't need it. Yeah, but we always fail to see that the other 7 billion people need it. And I'm very optimistic, because Bitcoin is in its 12th year, I guess. Yeah, 12th. And still is living, and it had died 1,000 deaths, I think. And it
still
was
kicking.
Able, it's still kicking, exactly. And if you see what's happening in the background, I mean, I'm very optimistic, like Taproot, I think will be locked in the next signaling phase, or even after this one, like in the next 2 to 4 weeks, it will be locked in, and then in November it will be activated, and we will have huge improvements in privacy, which is very, very, very important, and which is, in my opinion, the basic differentiator to all the other forms of money. That's the censorship resistance, the being non-inflationary, and the privacy factor. If we wouldn't have those, we wouldn't need, well, let's say it differently. If we lose these, then we lose. Yeah. So then it's the only chance for us, for society, to have a private, non-inflationary and uncensorable money. And so I'm still optimistic, and I think it's important to educate the general public and also Bitcoiners who might think differently, that it's important to stick to the cypherpunk ethos and focus on community, and that it's money for the people. And so I think the only reason what could happen is, and yeah, I mean, that's a fear, is that the community itself is having so different opinions that we like have big conflicts inside the community. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
That's very interesting, and it really leads directly to a question that we got asked on Twitter, when it comes to privacy and centralization, decentralization, holding your own key versus giving custody of your key to a third party who might be specialized in this, like exchanges or banks or whatever. And there are always pros and cons. You already said you are a proponent of self-custody. So am I, and also we at Relay, we try to foster this approach, but there are different approaches. And so one question was, what kind of regulation can make centralized exchanges be compatible with the financial and banking systems while still preserving client privacy and human rights?
It is none, I would say. I mean, in the Western countries, here in Austria, Switzerland, Germany, we all already have regulation. So the on and off ramps are regulated already. And yeah, every single step, like every single compromise we make, is like a slippery slope, you know. One compromise leads to the next. And basically, if we are not vigilant, we will like end there, that the Bitcoin system is basically the same as the banking system. So then I don't need Bitcoin, you know? Therefore I'd say, I think that, how shall I say, regulation won't change bad actors, you know? You just need to look at all the banks who were fined money because they were doing money laundering. While at the same time, if you like don't have enough money on your banking account, you will be punished, and they close your account, yeah, for nothing, because you just didn't have enough money at the moment. Yeah. So I think these kinds of regulations don't help anyone. And therefore, I think if we it's more an instrument of constant surveillance. And, you know, I mean, privacy, people always say, I don't do anything bad. It's okay when they watch my transactions, yeah? I mean, I always come with this example because I think it's very self-explanatory. If you go to the toilet, you don't have anything to hide, but you still close the door. And that basically is privacy. And it's the same with financial transactions. You express your values in your transactions. If I donate to a political party or any animal shelter or whatever, yeah, it's none of the banks and none of the government's business. And so I think it's very dangerous. Every step in regulation leads us towards more surveillance and George Orwell and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And an important point also for everybody to use this private monetary network, it will be Lightning. In your opinion, also in our opinion, a lot of the big majority, I would say, of the Bitcoin community says, okay, yes, this is the way to better scaling and better privacy. We need a second layer, or maybe third, fourth layer network. And one of them, or the most prominent right now, is Lightning, to make this happen. And there is also a quite complicated question from our audience. But I think this leads to that quite easily as well. So what is the likelihood of future Bitcoin users being priced out, in brackets too expensive, from using on-chain and Lightning in a self-custodial way? Because like opening a Lightning channel, as most of us probably know, requires high fees on-chain. So will we have a future where users only interact with custodial IOUs instead of Bitcoin, not doing self custody because it's basically going to be too expensive? So if I want to send $10 right now, I end up probably like paying $5 depending on how many UTXOs I have, and this will increase. So I think we all agree that in 10 years, the on-chain Bitcoin on-chain will not be effectively usable for a lot of people, just because one transaction will cost $100 or more. And also the Lightning network, every time you open a channel, it costs some on-chain fees. So for small transactions, going, you know, buying coffee at Starbucks, it won't even really make sense to open a channel if you're not really going there, you know, dozens of times. So yeah, can you work with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult question because it's very far in the future. But, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago, Bitcoiners knew already about the scalability problem and there was no Lightning network. And still, Bitcoin survived and people started to innovate and had the idea for the Lightning network, and people started to develop it. And I think there will also be solutions to that problem in the future. And it's not only a future problem. I mean, for people in the developing countries, they can't save much money. So when they earn like 100 euros or US dollars a month, they can't save. So for them, it's basically a problem right from the beginning. They will have to use the Lightning network for everything. And so I think as long as a big part of the Bitcoin network itself and also the Lightning nodes are secured by the community, I think it's okay that there will be solutions on layer 2, 3, 4, and 5. Because you can also compare it to Visa, for instance. You know, people are using the credit cards and those transactions never touch the base money. Yeah. So, It's only a comparison. It's not a technical comparison in that way, but it shows that you cannot also like compare Bitcoin on-chain transactions with Visa card transactions, which is also exactly happening very often. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think there will be solutions that enable people who can't afford the base chain transaction fees. I'm optimistic about developments in that regard. I mean, also because we see in Africa, South America, and all those regions, also more and more Bitcoiners, Bitcoin developers are coming from there. So I think they are going to find their own solutions, and that's the great thing about Bitcoin. It's open source, and everybody can contribute.
Exactly, I think so too. And it's exactly the big benefit of this open, decentralized network is that it attracts, because it solves such a relevant problem like sound money and a saving, basically, store of value, stuff like that. Because it is such a neat solution for such a relevant problem, it attracts a lot of money and a lot of talent. And these guys and everybody can. Well, it's not a company where you need to apply and maybe the boss says yes or no. If yes, you can contribute. If no. But everybody can contribute to this network. And so all the talent and all the money that is interested in solving this problem, and it's more and more of this coming in the last 10 years. It will also, like, the trend is clear, like more money and more talent is flowing in, the more of these problems will also be solved. And they're all technical problems. Peter Thiel says in his book, 0 to 1, you know, every technical problem will be solved at one point. It's just technical problems. It's nothing you can't solve. It's not a systemic problem. It's a technical problem. They will be solved at some point. So that's a very good answer. Thank you very much. We also used way too much of your time, Anita. But I would have one last question, my favorite question that I ask everybody. You obviously don't have to answer it, but it's very popular in our audience if you do. So this additional question would be, how much of your total wealth do you hold in Bitcoin, like in a percentage-wise?
I didn't calculate that, but what I can tell you is I'm using Bitcoin for my business and for as a savings instrument. And basically it's that way that I have, of course, also fiat money because it's the easiest and the cheapest. I'm making a joke, but actually I have fiat only for what I use, like for my daily uses for paying taxes, paying my people parts, like I pay them in Bitcoin, the freelancers who work for me, or in euros. But basically I'm saving Bitcoin and using fiat for everyday expenses and the stuff I need, you know.
Interesting. So you basically your savings account is all in Bitcoin.
Yes.
Okay. No other investments, like
I'm not
stocks or anything. Wow.
No, I'm not into bonds or stocks and these things. I'm a traditional Austrian. We don't learn about that. We have Sparbuch, but nothing else. And so Bitcoin for me is actually the most accessible way to store money, where everybody can educate themselves about it and you don't need anyone for it. And I think that's actually great, yeah.
Absolutely. Second that 100%. Thank you very much, Anita, for taking time. Really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to the release of your book and also to hopefully give one or two helpful inputs on it on GitHub. Thank you very much. And have a great rest of the day. Thanks, Anita.
Thank you very much, Julian. You too.